Okay, we're ready to get rolling. You're live. We're streaming. Go ahead and start whenever you like.
Good morning, everybody. We have almost a full house. We're waiting for our chair, Henry Alberto Nadal, to join us momentarily, but we are respectful of everybody's time, so we kind of want to get started. So we'll start with Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Anderson?
Here.
Ms. Blair? I know she's here. Ms. Cantu?
Here.
Dr. Olson?
Here.
Mr. Strawn?
Here.
Ms. Warren has not yet joined us, and neither is Dr. Barbarino. But we do have a quorum.
Do you want to circle back and call Ms. Blair again?
Sure. Ms. Blair?
Okay, I saw that she was unmuted. I thought she might call in, but we know she is with us. At any rate, yes. We do have a quorum. So at this point, we're opening it up to public forum. Oh, I see our chair has joined us.
Yes, I was, when I clicked on the link, it wouldn't let me in. So I kept clicking and
it finally worked.
Yeah, go ahead.
Charm.
Go ahead.
We're just at public forum. We've declared a quorum, and if you want to take it over at public forum, we're ready to go.
Board Member Cantu, Board Chair Barbarino, we do have an opening statement that we would like to go in and make before we proceed any further.
Please, Roger.
Great. Good morning. My name is Roger Mitchell. I am a supervising engineering geologist with the San Diego Water Board. Today, I'm serving as the remote meeting coordinator and would like to share some instructions on how to participate in today's virtual meeting. If you wish to make a verbal comment during the public forum or during one of the board agenda items, you must be signed into the Zoom webinar or be participating by phone. If you are currently watching the webcast on cowspan.org and you want to comment on an agenda item, you will need to register to sign into the Zoom webinar or call into the meeting. Information on how to participate can be found on the San Diego Water Board's meeting agenda website. Public comments will be accepted for each item after all presentations for the item are complete. If you wish to speak on an item, please virtually raise your hand. If you are using a computer or tablet, please use the raise hand button in Zoom. If you are calling into Zoom, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Please use the raise hand feature to let the board know you wish to speak, even if you previously registered and indicated that you wish to speak on an item. If you do not raise your hand, we will assume you no longer wish to speak. When public comments start on an item, the comment order will be determined by the order each person raised their hand. I will call on each commenter by name, or if you are on the phone, I will call the last three digits of your phone number, and then I will unmute each person when it is their turn to speak. Please note you will not appear by video during your testimony. There is a 3-minute time limit for each public commenter. However, the time could be extended at the chair's discretion. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen for those calling in by phone. We will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. I would like to remind everyone participating in the board meeting today to state your name for the record before you speak, and please unmute your microphone please mute your microphone if you are not speaking. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call or text area code 805-801-3676 or email it@agpvideo.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. All right. So Chris called the roll already when I was fumbling around with the video connection.
I did.
Okay, thank you. So this is the time for the public forum at this meeting. Roger Mitchell has just explained how to connect in and what the rules are. And so any member of the public may address the board. Roger, do we have any members signed up?
I do not see any hands raised at this time.
Oh, okay. Seeing none, let's move on to consider the adoption of the following board meeting minutes. Minutes of November 18th, 2020 and December 8th, 2020. Any questions on the minutes? Do I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes?
Betty Olson will move approval.
Thank you, Betty.
Gary, I'll second.
Thank you. Chris? Okay, Roger, what do we do? We've lost.
Eric, well, I'll just vote. Eric Anderson, I approve the minutes.
Okay. Betty?
Aye.
Gary?
Aye.
Celeste?
Aye.
Okay, and so do I, so thank you.
We also have Megan Blair on the line.
Did you get Megan?
Oh, I'm sorry, aye. I didn't realize that. Just a second.
Okay, I got it, thank you.
Okay. Megan, you're on telephone.
She's just off camera at the moment.
No, I'm on Zoom. I explained to Arbonneau before.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah, I'm still listening and in the meeting, but when my video is off, I'm just feeding the baby, so I don't take a break.
Very good. I just couldn't see you before. Thank you.
Board Member Blair, did you vote on the minutes or did you abstain?
Thank you, Dave. I reviewed the minutes, including the meeting that I wasn't present, and I voted affirmatively.
Thank you.
Okay. So this is time for comments. Let's start with the board members. Are there any meetings or comments that you wish to share with the board and the public? Last week, a few members, I think Stephanie and Celeste were present. We had a conversation with Mayor Todd Gloria of the City of San Diego. It was really an introduction. Some of us have known him for a while. He was my assembly member for a number of years. I think the thing that he was most frank about, and he's generally that way, was that he really appreciates the board for approaching him to help him understand water quality issues in our region. Dave or Celeste, did you have any further comments to make from our conversation with Mayor Gloria?
I thought it was a great conversation. His staff were very knowledgeable and very interested in kind of the 21st century ways of managing water on a municipal level. And he was very supportive of that. So I'm really quite encouraged. I enjoyed the conversation and look forward to the next one.
Okay. Stephanie isn't here, right?
Yes, Stephanie will be joining us momentarily. She's running a little bit late today.
Okay. Is Laurel Firestone with us?
Yes, she is.
Laurel?
I'm here.
Okay. There you go.
Great. I will start the State Board Liaison Report. So wanted to cover a few things. One is I mentioned this before, but we're participating in a wastewater-based epidemiology program for COVID-19. And we're working with CDPH and a number of different, actually an international effort to try to test for COVID within untreated wastewater to try to get a sense of its link to occurrence in the population. And we just in December were able to partner and get participation from a number of sanitation agencies, including City of San Diego Public Utilities Department, to voluntarily monitor for COVID-19 three times a week at one facility starting in January through June. And then the utilities will send that data to us, we'll compile it, and then send it to CDPH and the CDC. So that's kind of an interesting thing, and appreciate the partnership from local partners. Also in January, the State Board released the COVID-19 surveys that we had collected voluntarily around financial impacts for both for systems and households of COVID-19. And that is to better characterize the state-specific impacts on both, again, system finances and household debt loads. So we surveyed service to about 70% of Californians, 28 million people. We got a really good response rate. We estimated that the household debt load across the state just for households behind in water bills is about $1 billion as of the end of the year. And because water bills often include other non-drinking water charges like wastewater or stormwater, if we were just looking at drinking water, we're still estimating the debt load between 600 to 700 million. So really significant, about 1.6 million have some kind of water debt. And the average debt is about $500 per household. So we held a workshop on January 20th and have been working with different stakeholders to look at the federal funding that's been allocated. There's a relatively very small amount of federal funding that is available or is going to be available to states to help address household debt impacts. And so we're hoping in that we might get about $60 million to California. So we need to be looking at working to figure out how the state can best administer that. And then there are proposals in the next phase of stimulus packages that are being discussed in DC that would add more money to that. You know, we don't know what will happen on the federal level, and that money hasn't been given specifics in terms of how it will be. Even the $60 million that we're hoping to get doesn't have specifics in terms of how it would be distributed to the states. Also within that, we saw that there were significant financial crises going on, particularly in smaller systems that serve very low-income populations. There were about 25 systems that we estimate were in danger of not having enough money to operate within 180 days. So this is also something we're very much looking at to try to make sure we can support water systems through this financial crisis. We also at that January meeting, or actually on January 20th, we adopted a general waste discharge requirement for winery process water. We have on our February 2nd meeting adopted the revised total coliform rule, which is really kind of reconciling with the drinking water regulation, mostly just reconciling state and federal laws on total coliform testing and compliance. We are issuing the statewide order for investigation of PFAS at bulk fuel storage terminals and refineries. So we are requiring about, 161 active bulk fuel storage terminals and refineries to perform a one-time PFAS investigation. We also approved Prop 1 Stormwater Grant Program, Division of Financial Assistance, which will be announcing this week, approximately $100 million in funding awards for the Prop 1 Stormwater Grant Program. And I wanted to just, for this region, just mention a couple of the projects in this region, just so that you have a sense. Again, there hasn't been an announcement of awards, so these are just examples of projects from the region that could get funded once once Department of Financial Assistance Division of Financial Assistance gives follows up on the list. So those are Upper San Juan Creek Stormwater Capture, Infiltration, and Potable Reuse Project. There's the Maple View Street Green Infrastructure and Water Quality Improvement Pilot Project, which is looking at kind of green infrastructure and improved conveyance of stormwater flows, and a Stormwater Capture and Reuse Phase 2 project at the Alijo? You all probably know how to pronounce that better, but San Alijo Water Campus, to divert stormwater flows from a flood channel into a new infiltration basin. And I think that the goal is to improve a number of both supply resiliency, but also water quality in the San Alijo Lagoon, which is listed on the 303D list. And actually, I'm happy to answer questions as I go. So if you want to stop me, feel free, and I will keep going. This coming meeting on February 16th, we're really focused on drought and drought preparedness and climate change preparedness, specifically within the water rights division. So we have released a recommendation for effective water rights response to climate change, which is looking at, did a number of meetings and listening sessions with different stakeholders to identify data needs and improvements we can make in preparing for climate change and water shortage conditions within the water rights division. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be getting a very thorough hydrological update on the state, including various state and federal agencies. This is all just as an information item. And just looking at how we can be implementing actions to prepare for the critical water supply shortages that we have in a number of parts of the state, and for that matter, in the Colorado Basin. We also have the adoption meeting for the petition on the Oceanside and Fallbrook NPDES permits from this region. I am under strict ex parte communications restrictions, so please don't comment on it to me or ask questions specific in this liaison report. But that will be at the February 16th meeting. The only other thing I wanted to mention is that we are tentatively looking at March 17th as the Salt and Sea Workshop, where we do our annual Salt and Sea check-in. So those are the things I wanted to highlight. Happy to answer questions or figure out things I can bring to the next meeting.
Are there any questions of Laurel? Celeste?
I have a question. On your analysis of the $1 billion back utility payments owed, Are any of those small organizations, small water districts located in our district that we should be aware of?
Yeah, that's a good question. The challenge is that this was a representative sample. It wasn't a mandatory statewide reporting. And so we don't have a full sense of where exactly every system that's having that. We have a smaller sample that we are then projecting based on the representation of the data. So I don't believe any of the ones that we actually sampled are in this region. I can let you know if that changes, but I will say the district engineers out of our Division of Drinking Water offices actually did the direct outreach to systems to collect this data and check in with them on how things are going. And we're really trying to be proactive in letting systems know throughout the state that they should come to us early, that we're looking at how we can support them, and, you know, don't wait till you're in crisis. So if there are any systems that you all know about, please encourage them to do that. And I'll definitely let you know if there's something, if there's a system that comes up in particular in this region.
Thank you.
Other questions of Laurel? I'd like to go back to your first item. The University of California at San Diego campus has been monitoring wastewater to identify COVID-19 hotspots. And as far as I can tell from the information I've received, they can do it down to the dorm room to know to whom to talk and to whom to test. I don't know if that's true of the Cal State University system. Celeste, do you know?
I have not heard of any dorm room granularity at that focus, and I can't even imagine how they do it. That's pretty amazing. But no, I do not. Along the same lines, though, Catalonia has made a formal request to benchmark or team up with California on this very issue. They want to kind of get best practices. So stay tuned for your meetings with the Catalonians.
Okay. I'd also like to mention that some months ago, sometimes it's hard to know how many months ago, as they all are happening right here, the U.S. Navy contacted me about the scientific underpinnings of such a program. I had little to contribute to them, so I referred them, in fact, to the chemists and biologists at UCSD who have more to say than I do. My suggestion is that the state of California as a whole, if that's of interest, and the State Water Board in particular, not rely solely on water districts that do or do not have the capability to do this surveillance, but go to the military bases, Camp Pendleton, for example, North Island, just in our region, not to mention the other military bases around California, see what they're doing, see if they can help us in parts of the region where they are located, and that we go to every University of California campus and medical school to find out what they're doing around the state. I realize we only have 3 campuses, San Diego State, San Marcos, and UCSD, in our region. Oh, no, is Irvine in our region? I'm sorry.
About half of it.
Okay. Well, let's get the half information we can get from Irvine. The reason I'm suggesting that is not that I think the information coming from water districts is not important. It is. But my guess is they do not have the staff, namely at these various university locations, the faculty, to help analyze and understand the chemistry and biochemistry of the problem they may be facing. What they have, of course, that we don't have, is a lot of undergraduates who are quite happy to contribute to the problem and the point is to find out where they are in our region. I do not know if the counties and cities as jurisdictions have the same program. I am going on at a little bit of length here because California clearly has a problem of identifying the spread of COVID-19. And I don't mean just the spread. One can count the cases that come into hospitals, but individuals before they're symptomatic. And this appears to do that. That would be a great help to the state in their effort to, I don't know what to do, how to put it, to intervene in the spread of COVID-19 and identify people who should be quarantined or tested. That's my suggestion to the State Water Board, that they go further than just water districts. You may have authority in the water districts, but if you're serious, you'll go to the other agencies that I've mentioned. And I'm sure they will be very cooperative. I know that if you were to call up the chancellor of my own campus, he would be delighted to share with you and have you a continuous recipient of the information from his and the other 9 campuses, all of which are in different regions.
Chair Barbanel?
Yes.
Dr. Olson has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Betty, I don't see you on
I still have my hand up. I'll take it down so we don't get confused. Yes, I wanted to mention to Laurel that the chair of the Environmental and Civil Engineering, Sunny Jiang, has done a study for the Orange County Sanitation District. So there you have a large sanitation district that releases around 250 million gallons a day or processes. They don't release them. A lot of it is treated all the way to drinking water. But the important part of her study is that we were just apprised of is they have found both the European and the original strain in our wastewater. And I wondered if from your work at the state level, if you had found either the new, if the researchers had found either the new California strain or the South African strain that I guess has come up way through Brazil.
Yeah, I definitely don't know the details of what they found, but I will say what we're doing is part of a statewide and I think international collaboration that's going on. Ultimately, on our end, the CDC is coordinating as well as Department of Public Health at the state level. So we're actually just a very small piece. And I know that at least from our end, we know that the Orange County Sanitation District is participating in that as well. I definitely don't know what the results are at this point. It's really just trying to look at how we can play our part, our small part, as part of the groups working to help understand this whole issue. And I think those are all great points and questions.
I just have to say, I think Chair Abernow's point was very well taken in the fact that since some of these newer strains are supposed to be more infective, being able to sense where they are earlier. And of course, as we all know, younger populations seem to, particularly of the age group in college. So that also is a good idea. And I'm sure you could get cooperation from the universities.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I mean, it's likely that, some of the other Department of Public Health has been reaching out to universities and other sectors. So I can find out about that, but I agree, it's a great point.
Okay, great, thank you. And I had one other one about the water systems that were having financial difficulty. So I can certainly understand that. Are these smaller systems? I know that how you divide them up, you have like 3 to 6,000, then greater than 6,000. And do you know what the size of them are?
Yeah, so we, one of the things we were concerned about is that especially there's a number of small cities that are really all very low income. And those were seeing really high rates of, at least we heard anecdotally over 50% of customers that were behind on their bills. Mm-hmm. So we didn't restrict this to systems, for example, under 200 connections as we were going more in depth into system finances. We did, we went up to a larger number, and I think you're right. It may have been, I would need to check on the exact number threshold that we went up to for this more detailed system level analysis. So we got household data from all systems, but we were less concerned with the detailed finance of and financial kind of stress tests on the larger systems. There's financial impacts, and we asked for that, but really what we were trying to get a lot more details on and understand better was the smaller systems. It was bigger than we went above the 3,000 or 3,300 connection because of this issue of anecdotally before the survey, we were hearing that some of the, medium to small systems were having a lot of financial trouble as well. So, I think what we heard in general with that was that systems, mostly systems weren't in risk of, not being able to operate at this point, but they were cutting off pretty significant maintenance and capital projects that were needed. And so, there will be consequences of that as in the future. I think we're trying to understand that. And I'll just say, as my personal opinion is, as we look at the limited funding that is coming to address this issue, to the extent that we can address household debt and, cash flow in these really vulnerable systems, I would imagine that should be a priority, especially given that the type of money that we're looking at is, I think won't cover 95% of the debt that's out there statewide. So, but those are all questions that we have to work through and understand better. And lastly, I would just say we're doing a lot within the SAFER program to try to collect and understand better technical managerial, but particularly financial vulnerability and capacity of systems as we look at risk and how to support connecting them with technical assistance providers that can help with developing budgets and rate structure and things to understand how, if there's ways of supporting that challenge and sort of addressing that risk factor as we look at systems statewide.
Have you worked with the Small Water Systems Alliance on this?
Yeah, I don't know. We did have a number of associations that were part of, including, I know some of the folks that were represented by within that group, as well as the Mutual Association, to help us in both crafting the questions and then making, reaching out and encouraging systems to be responsive to the survey.
So I can tell you for our small district in terms, well, it's not a small district. I mean, it has 60,000 connections. So I guess it's a medium district or something. It has, where we've seen the greatest impact, interestingly, is in you get fined if you don't pay your water bill, and those have all been forgiven. And so that looks like it's about $1 million for us, and the total overall budget is $78 million, so it's easily absorbed. Mm-hmm. But I imagine if you have a much lower budget, it's probably much more difficult. The point is that if higher end areas are having problems, it's probably much more impactful.
Yeah.
Than smaller agencies.
Yep.
That's all. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Betty. Other questions of Laurel? Thank you, Laurel, for your time. While you're here, I think I'll direct this question to Mr. Gibson. In tracking down where COVID is spreading using the wastewater method or others, do we have a new EPA management for District 9 that could help us out across the state?
The appointment of a new regional administrator has not yet occurred, but we do have an acting administrator from the Department of Water there that we are in communications with. We are getting support on some of our other key issues from EPA. I would expect that one would be one as well.
Okay. Could we connect up with this acting administrator and pass that information on to the state board so that they may already know it? I don't know. But as you can tell, I think that the spread of COVID, I think we all would agree, in California, especially in the last few months, is a really serious public health problem for all of us. And any insight we can get, I think, will be beneficial, not only to all of us personally, but all of us with water issues across the state.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Okay. Again, thank you, Laurel. Mr. Gibson, do you want to address the executive officer's report?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have any questions on the written report that you received this month? There's a couple of things I'd like to highlight. First of all, as unfortunately we had to report, one of our former employees, John Anderson, recently passed away. He retired after 34 years with our agency. And we mentioned this in the report because he truly had an outsized role, not only within the agency, but with other organizations like Coast Keeper, the Port of San Diego, in his work on cleanups around the bay. He was already missed. He's going to be even more missed, unfortunately. But I'd also like to ask the board to join me in a bit of good news and congratulations for one of ours, Ben Neal, who has now been promoted to Senior Water Resource Controller and Engineer over the Groundwater Protection Unit. He is just now assuming those duties. So things continue going forward. As requested by Board Member Cantu, Vice Chair Cantu, and Board Member Warren, we've included in this month's reports two reports on border issues, one on the U.S. EPA's USMCA process. Their next eligible public entities group meeting is going to be on the 25th. Vice Chair Cantu and I participated in an interview with Ross Strategic, the contractor working with U.S. EPA, and provided them a point of view and a number of subjects that they wanted to evaluate. Happily, so far, on the short list of projects that they're considering, but all the projects are still on the table, the board's top priority of a river diversion system sized up to 163 million gallons per day is still on the list. They're evaluating sizing options and regulatory constraints, but it is at least good news so far that it's on the short list, and we'll see how that's ultimately weighed in the value engineering report. We also have an interesting report this month, especially, I hope, for State Board Member Laurel Firestone, a project that we're calling, as San Diego State called it, the Aztec Path to Conquering PCE. The reason I mention this is that this is a collaboration between San Diego State University, several departments, and the Water Board that is made possible by a small amount of money that is from our discretionary contracts, $35,000, that allows us to embark on a SAGE project with SDSU. SAGE is a program of partnerships between universities and colleges and public agencies around the nation. San Diego State is one of about maybe two dozen who are participating in it. And rather than have one student intern work on this project, we have several classes and several faculty working on it. And we can grow the program beyond the current evaluation of closed cleanup sites to eventual monitoring an assessment of some of these sites using some of their chemistry faculty and equipment as well. I mention this because, unfortunately, the Department of Finance has required that the state board find a 5% pay cut or a reduction cut, and discretionary contracts are among the things that are on the table. So opportunities like this, while we've seized it and we have made progress looking at environmental justice issues with closed cleanup sites, sites that were closed in the 80s and 90s without necessarily evaluating the risk of indoor vapor intrusion to overlying properties, we may lose the opportunity to continue this if indeed we cut our discretionary contracts. And so while that may be very bureaucratic, this is a real force multiplier and a real service to the community that I hope that we can continue with San Diego State and maybe others. And as you mentioned, we had a meeting with Mayor Gloria. Border issues were very prominent in that, and we continue to work with the City of San Diego and the other agencies on keeping the pressure up on US EPA for US side solutions to the longstanding border issues, even as we address sources and partnership opportunities in Mexico. I have also reached out to Chair Fletcher of the Board of Supervisors and to Board Supervisor Vargas to also update them as well and to seek opportunities for the Water Board to work with the County of San Diego on water quality issues. And unless there are any questions on those or other items, that concludes my report.
Are there questions for Dave?
Well, not a question, but an announcement along the same lines. EPA is scheduling or has scheduled a public meeting where the public is generally invited to talk about the border cross-border flows, San Diego Tijuana region cross-border flows. And that will take place via Teams on February 26th from 10 to 11:30 Pacific time. So if anybody is interested in that, you can probably call our staff to find out how to connect to those that team meeting.
Okay. I want to thank Dave not only for the information he's reported, but on behalf of the residents around me, I had an inquiry that was fully and thoroughly answered in the executive office report, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Quite welcome.
Okay. Let's move on to the future agenda items. Are there any items that members of the board would like to request be on future agendas as the staff is able to make information, I don't know what to say, bring it together coherent? Betty, are you raising your hand or you're rubbing your chin?
I'm doing both. No, I've done the official hand raise. The other one is...
I can't see the hand raises. I don't know why, but it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. The real hand seems to work. Okay.
All right. What I wanted to say is I had asked a very long time ago when I first got on the board to look at the interaction with chemicals that affect an important part of the development of the unborn fetus. And there are chemicals that might interact, like nitrate and perchlorate. And when I asked for this, I asked for a board report, but I think it's much too specific. And so what I'd like to ask for is anyone who's interested beside myself to look at the range of chemicals that might cause problems with the SIM transporter in the unborn fetus. But more importantly, what I'm interested in is I think OHEA should give the briefing. And I think to ask for it to be for the board was incorrect. Well, that's my question. I guess it's Dave.
Okay.
I might, if I might just mention one thing related to that, which is we do an annual review at the State Water Board of drinking water regulations and priorities. And so at least from the drinking water, to the extent your question is around drinking water exposure, this year, our staff is hoping to do more of that kind of a review around risk. So not just look at the pipeline in which our staff are working through things, but help to frame some of the thought thoughts around to help us with priority setting around risk of different contaminants. So I will make sure that this board has a sense of when that's coming, and also can bring back that, I know we'll be working, we'll be working with OEHA on that. So to the extent that that connection can be helpful and an opportunity, I'll definitely connect this board to those opportunities and to that work.
I'd like to thank you. It's kind of when you start looking at symbiotic or multiplicative effects of two different pollutants. So thank you. Thanks, Henry.
Okay. Why don't we move on to the consent calendar, items 4, 5, and 6. Does any board member or any member of the public wish to remove any of those items from the consent calendar? Okay, then I think it is within our rights to take the consent calendar as a whole, which we will now do. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Betty Olson will move the consent calendar. And I just wanted to say, I wanted to thank Dave Gibson for going over the consent calendar items with me. Thank you.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Gary.
Okay.
Chris, do you wish?
I am ready, yes.
Okay.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Aye.
Let's come back. Oh, there you are. Sorry.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. It's now 10 minutes of 10, and my notes say that we should have a break. So let's have a 10-minute break and come back at 10 o'clock, or literally 10:01. Thank you.
Change now, as they're going to describe, is that Sacramento State Board is now consolidating all the public participation component in Sacramento. And while with COVID-19 and the ability to have meetings like this, perhaps we can maintain the same kind of public participation and awareness, we wanted to at least have the opportunity for the board and the public to see the work of Carrie Nagoda and staff on this integrated report, to get a sense of the amount of work that's involved with it and the amount of work that it presents to us in terms of addressing impaired waters. And so with that, I will turn it over to Carrie Nagoda. Thank you, Carrie.
Good morning, board members. As Dave said, I'm Carrie Nagoda. I'm an engineer in the Monitoring Assessment and Research Unit, also called MARU. And let me pull up my presentation here. Let me know. All right. Can you see that?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. All right. So today I'm here to discuss the draft findings of the 2020-2022 Clean Water Act, Sections 303D and 305B Integrated Report. I'll also provide an overview of the public process that will be taking place later this year. Each state is required to submit an integrated report every 2 years to the US EPA. It is made up of two parts, which are described in the Clean Water Act. The first part is Section 303D, or a list of impaired water bodies or segments of water bodies. It's also referred to as the 303D list. And these are the water bodies that do not meet the water quality standards. The second part is Section 305B, or a report on the condition of the state's waters. This includes high quality waters in areas where we may have insufficient data. Combined, these two parts are referred to as the integrated report. In California, the integrated report is released in cycles, and these cycles occur every 2 years on the even numbered years, with three regions reporting per cycle. So currently, we are on cycle with regions 3 and 5. To determine which water body and pollutant combinations are placed on the 303D list or delisted from the 303D list, we follow a statewide listing policy. This policy covers which factors to use, such as numerical thresholds, which can include water quality objectives or standards, health advisories, and things like toxicity. The policy also describes the data assessment process. This includes spatial and temporal resolution, as well as the statistical evaluations to use per pollutant type. The integrated report process is quite lengthy, and there are many steps. First, there is procuring the data. The public solicitation used for data this cycle was included for you as supporting document number one. The next steps are the data organization and mapping the sample locations. This is where we do the quality assurance review. And next are the data analysis steps. And this is where we develop the lines of evidence or LOEs and create decisions. I'll provide more details on these steps later, but in short, LOEs are the pieces of information that go into making a decision to place a water body on the 303D list or removing it from the list. Next are steps 4 and 5, which is the report writing and public process portion. And then finally, the integrated report is submitted to the EPA. So as I mentioned, the integrated report process has many steps. And with each cycle, there is exponentially more data available for analyses, which is a good thing, but it also takes a lot more time to organize and analyze. And as a result, in November 2017, Earth Law Center, Los Angeles Waterkeeper, and the San Diego Coastkeeper filed suit against State Water Resources Control Board for the integrated report being completed years late. The 2014-2016 integrated report was not approved by US EPA until April of 2018. And then in January 2020, State Board was required to submit a corrective action plan for complying with the deadlines from April 1st, 2020 and beyond. As part of this plan, State Board created a new unit with 8 positions. It's called the Assessment Policy and Process Unit, located in the Division of Water Quality. In addition, efficiencies were built into the process, which I'll go over next. But first, I wanted to say, if there are specific questions regarding the lawsuit or anything State Board related, Rebecca Fitzgerald is here today with us, as Dave had mentioned. So here's a look at the integrated report process I showed previously. And I want to point out some of the major changes that State Board has implemented to speed up this process. One is the water body mapping effort, which uses an online GIS portal that allows for easy input from the regions, such as, was this station that was submitted by a data provider truly a surface water sample, or might it actually be from stormwater sampling? Another huge improvement is in the line of evidence development. And I'll show more details about what goes into an LOE later, but State Board has significantly automated the process of generating LOEs with the use of R-based programming. We call this the R-based electronic line of evidence processor, or RELIP. And finally, there will be a major change, as Dave alluded to, in the public process during this cycle of the integrated report. In the past, each region held its own public process, which included public staff report review, a board hearing, and adoption. And then the public process was repeated again at the state board for all on-cycle regions. So instead, this time, there will be one public process at the state board that includes all on-cycle regions integrated reports. And for those of you who are interested in reviewing and providing comments for the 2020-2022 integrated report, here is a schedule for the new process. All on-cycle staff reports should be released in May, and they will be available for public comment. A state board hearing is scheduled to take place in June, and then the board will adopt in early next year, with the submittal to the USEPA scheduled before the April 1st, 2022 deadline. To receive email notifications, you may sign up for the LIRIS list, and the web address is shown below. You'll need to navigate to Water Quality and Integrated Report 303D-305B. And now here are some of Region 9's preliminary results for the 2020-2022 Integrated Report. Over 1 million rows of data were assembled and reviewed for about 150 pollutants in water, sediment, and tissue samples. And this data was generated and submitted by state, local, federal government agencies, as well as non-governmental agencies. After review and some QA, this information was turned into over 16,350 LOEs. Thankfully, RELIP generated the majority of them, but we still had to create over 500 manually. And the details included in an LOE will be shown soon. Ultimately, those LOEs were used to make about 4,000 decisions. So here is an example LOE. An LOE can contain information from one or many samples. The important information in an LOE are the water body, the beneficial use, the pollutant in question, the matrix of the sample or samples, which can be water, sediment, or tissue, the fraction, which can be total or dissolved, and the assessment threshold being used to evaluate that particular pollutant. In our example, the water body here is Adobe Creek. The beneficial use is cold freshwater habitat. The pollutant is silver. The matrix is water. Fraction is dissolved. And the assessment threshold is based on the California Toxics Rule, which is a hardness-based threshold, which means that the threshold is calculated based on that sample's particular hardness. And then the LOE looks like the line below while we are making decisions in our database. So all lines of evidence for a pollutant and water body combination are considered for a single decision. Here is an example of a preliminary decision for ammonia in the Tijuana River. You can see all of the lines of evidence generated during this cycle, which are the four listed above at the bottom of the screen. And the older ones are grouped at the bottom from previous cycles. When totaling all of the samples here, we have 41 out of 54 samples that exceeded the water quality threshold for ammonia for the warm freshwater habitat beneficial use. So this preliminary result would be a list on the 303D list. Here is another example decision. This is for indicator bacteria in a portion of Mission Bay. Bacteria lines of evidence are a bit more complicated. I won't go into the details, but it's because of various statistical analyses used, such as a geomean or statistical threshold value calculated, which is depending on the data that's available. Here in this example, we use a geomean, which is the LOE in the middle row. 11 out of 192 geomean exceedances for Enterococcus occurred in this sample. This preliminary decision is a do not list on the 303D list. All decisions for a single water body or segment are then used to place that water body in a category. Briefly, categories 1 through 3 are used for potentially healthy water bodies, where beneficial uses are being met or there is not enough information to determine beneficial use attainment. Categories 4 and 5 are for impaired water bodies. 4A, 4B, and 5 are the water bodies that appear on the 303B list. And here are the preliminary results for Region 9 for the 2020-2022 Integrated Report. In the top line, you'll see over 200 water body pollutant combinations are proposed for listing on the 303D list. The second line shows over 3,000 do not list decisions that are proposed. This includes both good quality waters and where we may have insufficient data. The next two lines show that over 40 water body pollutant combinations will potentially be delisted this cycle. And the bottom two lines show that over 200 water bodies will potentially remain on the 303D list, or what we call do not delist. And with that, I will take any questions.
Are there any questions of Ms. Nagoda?
I have a question, Henry.
Okay, I'm sorry, I can't see hands.
Oh, here, I'll stop sharing here.
Oh. No, it's not your sharing. There's the hands just don't appear, but a real hand works. Yes, Celeste.
So the age-old question is, are our water bodies getting better or getting worse? That's my question for you.
Got it.
Well, if you look at, over 200 new listings, so that doesn't sound so great. But we also will have potentially up to 45 delistings. So if you look at the ratio.
5 to 1, right?
Yeah.
Well, the probably 25 years that I've been following this, the list only gets longer. The list has never gotten shorter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have to come to the conclusion that our water bodies are not getting better. If you look at them in the collective. Mm-hmm. And it is true that science gives us more information every year, so we know more. And with that knowledge and the ability to test at increasingly smaller increments, that tells us that we're really not making the progress we need to make.
Vice Chair Cantu, if I could jump in as well. I think the data is really quite clear. The trend is upwards and has been for a long time. I would submit editorially that among the reasons for that is that there really haven't been fundamental changes in some of the things that we use and things that we do. Pesticides, for example, we have excellent labeling procedures, but we're still using them. And in some cases, often misusing them. Homeowners, perhaps more so than farmers, but nonetheless, we still have those toxins. And what works on plants and fields also works really well in rivers and streams, even days, even years afterwards. Some of what we're seeing is information lag. You know, we're finally processing some data that we received a while ago, data that was collected even farther back. And so some of this is a little bit dated, but unfortunately, we're not chasing the asymptotic line on concentrations. We're seeing numbers like the one for the Tijuana River substantially higher than our normal detection limits. So there really do have to be some fundamental changes in some of the sources that we have, both here and in Mexico. And while we have prioritized the recreational beneficial use and bacterial indicators, and there are things we can do in the municipal stormwater program, we still need to move beyond planning to actually doing real things to see that trajectory change. So I submit that while the numbers are sobering, there is reason for optimism. We talked about the USMCA process to address some of the transboundary flows. The municipalities, I think, are beginning to get their feet under them on the MS4 issues, which we won't talk about because it's a pending matter. But it is very sobering, and it shows the amount of work that we have to do ahead of us. If what we do is TMDLs, we are adding 213 new TMDLs we have to write. So this is a sobering assessment, but that is all the more reason why we wanted to be sure to share it with you and the public watching today, so that they can participate in that process going forward at state board. So yes, it is sobering, and the numbers are going the wrong way. We will plan on making some changes that we will hope see changes in the in those qualities as well.
Dave, do you know what the story is in the other eight regions of California?
I would suggest it's very strongly the same as ours. Chad and Rebecca and Carrie can tell you specifically, but my conversations with my colleagues is we see the same thing.
What about nationally?
Pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Rebecca Fitzgerald speaking, and I can't seem to raise a hand or turn on my video. So I'll just, if you would like, I can share some of my perspective of what I've seen both across California and across the nation.
Indeed. Please, your commentary would be welcome.
So just to introduce myself, I'm Rebecca Fitzgerald. I'm within the State Water Board Division of Water Quality in our Standards and Assessments section. And thank you for having me. And it was just such a long virtual trip, Gibson. So thank you. But yeah, you know, we see a similar trend in an increase in the number of water bodies that are listed as impaired, both across the state and across the country. And I think primarily it reflects that we are getting more data. We are doing a better job of collecting surface water data and analyzing those data. And so we are starting to see that assessment and what we know about those rivers catch up with reality. And I think that's more of what we are actually the reflection of the increase in the number of listed water bodies, more so than necessarily a trend in the actual water quality getting worse over time. In fact, I share Mr. Gibson's kind of optimism that we've actually made some good strides in improving, especially those waters where we have focused time and attention as far as TMDLs or other cleanup efforts. So I just wanted to add that sort of been my sense. It's, I think, primarily the fact that we are getting more and more data each cycle and getting a better sense of what's actually happening out there on the ground.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Henry, may I ask a question?
Please.
I wanted to know, so in these, how do you determine population impacts? So, you know, I mean, in other words, I realize that now California appears to be losing lots of people, but how do you, most of the areas have been growing over time. So how do we integrate that into the situation? Yes, I'm asking Carrie, I'm sorry. Or Dave or anything.
So while they're thinking about that, Betty, it seems to me that that's a good question. And we ought to look at the number of listed sites per population member. And if they're, if the trend is solely based or primarily based on population increase, that's where it probably show up the easiest.
So this is Chad. I can chime in here if it's
okay.
And I'll introduce myself. Chad Laughlin. I am the senior environmental scientist. I oversee the monitoring, assessment, and research unit. And it's a good question, Betty. That's not something we really look at for the integrated report. We spend most of our time, as Carrie's indicated, basically evaluating the data for the objectives, and we really don't have time to go beyond that. You know, that's something we can look at maybe when we're trying to prioritize, you know, how to consider what to work on in terms of the actual impairments, which is a whole, as Dave mentioned, that's a whole process in itself with so many impairments and so few staff. How do we pick what to work on? And so that's something maybe we could consider in that process.
Well, my concern, I mean, that is exactly my concern, because if everything you're doing on one hand is being outweighed by population growth and everything being done there, somehow we have to have an approach which integrates that or allows you to overcome that or somehow makes things move forward. Otherwise, we are increasing the list and taking very few off. So I don't know if it's a difference in approach or different, but not, it's not saying that they're not important. It's just saying, how are we going to get success? What's the way to success? Is there a way? I mean, I know that we've done this for a long time. EPA has done it for a long time, but maybe there's different ways of approaching.
That's so true. I will say that, you know, Carrie mentioned that there's a number of delistings, over 40 delistings that are, that look preliminary in terms of the actual results right now. And, you know, the public process hasn't started, but I do share Rebecca's sentiment that, you know, we've seen, you know, effectively a really large increase in the amount of data, which has resulted in a lot of new listings. But at the same time, where we've had listings being addressed, we've seen those delistings happen. And so a lot of those preliminary delistings are for things like indicator bacteria, which has been a big focus, primarily along our beaches. So we have seen, with population increases in those locations, success in delistings occurring. So I do remain optimistic in that progress can be made.
Yeah, Board Member Olson, if I could jump in, there's reason for optimism. If we look back 50 years ago to just before the adoption of the Clean Water Act amendments by Congress and the adoption of the Port of Cologne Water Quality Control Act by California, we had rivers and even a large portion of San Diego Bay, as John Anderson reported a couple of years ago, that were functionally dead. Low dissolved oxygen, depauperate life. San Diego Bay is healthier now than it's been in the last century and getting better. And so some of the things that have gone well are enforcement tools, for example, cleanup and abatement orders. The board adopted a significant cleanup and abatement order in 2011, 2013 for the shipyards. That has made a big difference. And we aggressively regulated wastewater and where we can, water supply issues in order to ensure that we protect water quality there as well. But those were the easy things, as it turns out. Now we're faced with non-point source pollution, which is much harder to grapple with socially. All of us bear a portion of that load, and it's much harder to deal with technically. I think there, too, there is reason for optimism. And one of those is the approach that this board has taken, taking an outcomes-based approach. If you look at that list of 213, you can easily just shrug and say, there's no way we can do it all. But if, on the other hand, you look at the two or three that are the key drivers, implementing best management practices or source control practices can lead to capturing a number of the others. And in the Tijuana River, that is exactly the approach that we're taking. We're looking at solid waste and we're looking at bacterial indicators, not all 30 of the constituents, but the measures that are implemented to address those two will probably have a very beneficial effect on reducing the sources and conveyances of many of the others. But it's going to require some changing of thinking and how we regulate some of our activities across the state. And that includes pesticide licensing. An average homeowner can go to a market and buy a gallon of concentrate that he or she could probably never legitimately use within the lifespan of that product. And that can become a significant waste later on when it's discharged into the landfill or down the street by being misused. So there are things that are being discussed right now at Cal EPA in terms of coordinating among the several agencies, like Department of Toxic Substances Control, Pesticide Regulation, and the water boards. Those conversations, I think, need to go forward more affirmatively on an outcomes-based approach that reduces sources and does so across the breadth and width of California to address those sources, because we're not going to get it with one BMP here, one treatment plant there approach. It is rather complex, but there is reason for optimism. 50 years ago, things were far worse. I will predict that 50 years, things will be far better than they are now, but it won't come easy and it won't come cheap.
Well, I certainly know I used to show my students Huntington Beach in the 1930s, where it was simply oil derricks, and say that, you know, we shouldn't be so negative. But I do, I'd like to put Tijuana River in a separate category, because it really is difficult. And saying on your approach, so is that going to be coordinated between the regional boards throughout the state, where you say you're an outcome-based, or all the regional boards? How do they integrate that? Maybe it's beyond this discussion, but...
It's a very worthwhile discussion, Dr. Olson, and I will answer it as succinctly as I can. Yes, we do coordinate among the several regions. I mentioned pesticides because several of the executive officers and staff have recently discussed some common issues among our regions and how we're grappling with the effects on water quality in our regions from that. Although the Tijuana River is really in a separate and unique category, some of the measures that we're employing there, I think, are good testing grounds for how they might be effectively employed elsewhere. Trash, for example. The Tijuana River is not the only place in our region where we have a significant amount of trash. And one of the ways that we've coordinated statewide is the state board adopted a trash amendments policy, which directed how the regional boards work with municipalities and other discharges to address the sources and conveyance of trash. And I think we're just before seeing a significant change in the solid waste in trash in our streams landscape, because those measures are now being implemented at catch basins throughout the cities and through an iterative process. And Lori Walsh and I attended a SANDAG subcommittee on solid waste issues along freeways and throughout the region. So those are several layers of coordination that are required. But as I indicated, because it's non-point source, it's much trickier and more difficult and requires assiduous attention rather than episodic attention. And truly, at the end of the day, the ability of the water boards to do this effectively is constrained by the resources that we lack. Our office is supposed to have about 125 people to meet the statutory obligations. We've never had more than 79. And while you can work smarter, and indeed this integrated report shows some significant improvements in process and our ability to manage large volumes of data, we're nowhere near where we need to be to truly integrate and work across multiple layers of organization and through multiple measures like best management practices or catch basin inserts.
Well, I look forward to speaking to you more about this in the future and understanding it better, because I think coordination across the regions is really the way to approach it. Thank you very much. And thank you, Chad and Carrie.
Yes, for an amazing amount of hard work.
Board Chair Barbanel, would you like to invite the public to comment on this item?
Certainly. Do we have some requests?
Doesn't believe so, but let me poll the participants. If any member of the public would like to speak, please go ahead and virtually raise your hand in the Zoom meeting or press *9 on your phone now. And remember to state your name for the record before you speak. And I'm taking a look at the list, and I don't see any members of the public wishing to speak.
Okay. Thank you for the suggestion.
Mr. Chairman, let the record show that Board Member Warren was able to join us. Perhaps she has a question, but we can at least acknowledge that she's joined us.
Okay. Welcome, Stephanie. Okay. The next item is Dave Gibson's item. It's the election of chair and vice chair for Region 9. Dave?
Well, I don't get to choose, unfortunately, or fortunately, but in this case, the regional boards are required in their first meeting of the calendar year to elect a new chair and vice chair, the roles that you think you know very well. And so at this point in time, I'll ask the board if there is a motion for a chair or a vice chair that the board would like to entertain. Board Member Olson has got her hand up.
Yes, I believe that we've asked so much of Henry over the years, and he's done such a wonderful job that maybe it's time to give him a break. And so I would like to nominate Celeste Cantu, who's been the vice chair, I believe, for 2 years now. And I know Gary Strawn has his, I see another hand up.
I was just going to say the same thing, so I'll second that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Is this when we campaign?
No.
Yes, at this point in time, we have a motion and a second on the table. Any of the board members may address it. Vice Chair Cantu may very well not choose to accept the nomination. Vice Chair Cantu, would you like to speak to the motion for nominating you as chair?
I'd be honored to follow Henry as chair of this Region 9 board, which is so highly respected throughout the state.
So I wonder if I can say something. I appreciate having served as the chair, but with the new administration in Washington, there are some issues that I have spoken to my Congress member about, in particular, reinstating the so-called Iran nuclear deal that the Obama administration signed in 2015. I happen to know a little bit about not Iran so much, but the nuclear part. And I volunteered. I don't know where the process is yet, but we've only had a new administration for a couple of weeks. So I will not be taking a rest, but thank you very much. But I think it is important to have somebody whose attention can be fully on Region 9. So I am quite happy to, you don't need a third on a motion, but I will vote for Celeste. Thank you.
So there is a motion and a second. Are there any other comments or questions from board members? And seeing none, Chris, will you call the roll on the motion of the election of Celeste Cantu as the chair for 2021?
I will. Mr. Anderson?
A hearty aye for Celeste.
Ms. Blair?
Well, yes.
Ms. Cantu, oh, you can't vote on yourself. Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbonneau?
Yes.
Okay. That motion carries.
Thank you very much. I really look forward to working closely with all of you as we move forward and with our stellar staff. Thank you very much.
So thank you. We also do need to elect a vice chair who can substitute for Celeste in the event she's unable to attend a meeting or represent the board. Is there a nomination for a vice chair? Celeste?
I'd like to nominate Betty Olson. We've had an opportunity to work together. Both in this board and a little bit outside of this board. And I think we our working styles are very similar. And I would enjoy having her as vice chair if she would be able and willing to serve in that capacity.
Dr. Olson?
Well, I would be very glad to. I think Celeste and I, with our backgrounds, complement each other. And my lack of knowledge on the rules and the regulations and exactly how they work will be corrected by Celeste because she's had so much experience over the years. But we have had an opportunity to work together, and her, what were they, the four horsemen, which was always rememberable about drought in Orange County. So, yes, I'm glad to serve.
So there is a motion. Is there a second?
I seconded it.
Okay, thank you, Henry. Any comments or questions?
I'd like to make one. I hope I can do one third as well as Henry. His performance, as he well knows, I used to say to him, "You're very good." You know, like with the shock, because that's the way academics are. So with that, I'm quiet.
Thank you.
With the motion and the second, Chris, can you please call the roll?
Will do. Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Yes.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbonneau?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Congratulations.
Okay. It's your move, Celeste, to continue the meeting.
We have a closed session scheduled for several things, including personnel action for an annual evaluation as scheduled, and consideration of various civil actions. Yes, and I think our agenda has been, our public agenda has been completed.
Vincent?
Yes, I'd like to just announce the closed session items for the public. We will be meeting on two items, as Chair Cantu announced. That will be items 9I, People of the State of California versus the International Boundary Watering Commission, United States section, and also on item number 12, for personnel, the San Diego Water Board may meet in closed session to consider the appointments, employment, and evaluation of performance of a public employee. So we ask that the board members leave the Zoom meeting and join the Teams meeting.
Could I ask quickly, may I ask our board secretary to resend me the Teams meeting?
Will do.
Thank you so much, Christina.
And I need the same thing to my personal email if that's possible.
I can do that.
Let's send it all around. And let's take a few minutes break and convene at 10:45.
Chair Cantu, do you want to come back or you just want to adjourn the public meeting now?
We'll we need to come back and report out. So we need to adjourn. I don't know if you want to adjourn and then open it again or just recess for our closed session.
We can recess provided we all leave the Zoom meeting so we don't inadvertently carry over into that and then log into the Teams. When we're done, we can log back in a quorum and announce any actions and then adjourn the meeting.
Thank you. So let's convene on Teams at 10:45.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, great. Thank you.
Just letting Chris know that we're back on. There you are, Chris. Thanks.
Okay, you guys are good to go whenever you're ready.
Thank you. We'll declare the Region 9 board back in session to report out the decisions of our executive session. No decisions were made. We addressed two issues as announced prior, and our agenda is now complete. Thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye. How do I get out of this?